Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There is a story for everyone here, because every story matters. Welcome everyone to the Storybox. This is the place to be if you are a lover of stories, learning new and interesting things, and if you want to grow abundantly. My name is Jay Phantom, and I believe it's my purpose to help you realize your worth and become the greatest and best version of you possible. I am grateful that you're here today. Now let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. Are you someone that tends to focus on the what ifs rather than the what is? My next guest for you guys on the Storybox podcast is none other than the amazing, kind, sweethearted Byron Katie. And I was super blessed to be able to spend almost about an hour diving into and unboxing Byron Katie's story. And I have to say to you all, she shares some things that you won't hear anywhere else. She's never shared them before. So I felt very privileged and honored to be able to hear that coming from her. And I know you guys are going to feel challenged by what she has to say. But Katie is one of the most foremost and most recognized people when it comes to self-help and this program or practices called The Work. She's a best-selling author of multiple books. She's friends with Eckhart Tolle, Tony Robbins, just to name a few of those titans when it comes to personal development and helping grow and become more. But for those of you who don't know Katie's story, she entered into a 10-year long downward spiral of depression, agoraphobia, self-loathing and suicidal despair. She drank in excess and her husband kept bringing her pints of ice cream and codeine pills, which she ate like candy, and she ended up weighing over 200 pounds. She slept with a gun under a bed, and she prayed every single morning not to wake up. And it got to a point of concern for her children that she didn't end up killing herself. One morning, she was lying on the floor when a cockroach went past her foot, and she realized that she needed to really change. And that's where these four questions of the work were born. She started to change. And on this episode, we get vulnerable. We dive into all this stuff. And I think what Katie is all about is so true, that whenever we go through, if you are someone that has gone through or you are going through mental health problems, depression, self-loathing, suicidal thoughts, anorexia, bulimia, anxiety, stress, you name it, then this is an episode that you need to listen to, you need to share, because it is so important that you understand the value of doing the work. And once you have done this work of moving towards healing yourself, which does, I know, take time, because I went through this myself and I still go through this every single day, you cannot fully get over mental health or depression. It's still always going to be there, but if you're doing the work every single day, if you're not giving up, then you will be able to overcome. You can be an overcomer. And what I will say to you as well, if you do get something from this episode, share it around. Be a champion in somebody else's life. You can be a catalyst for change for positive change, but that's your choice. I completely understand that. But hopefully this episode is able to enable you to share that or this important truth to somebody that you know. You can also watch this episode live on, or not live, but in the flesh over on YouTube. You can subscribe over there for more. Please let us know what you think by leaving a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. And you can also leave a comment on YouTube. That goes a long way into spreading these kinds of stories to the world. So I appreciate you all. With all that being said, my friends, you guys know what time it is. It's time to dive into the story box and hear Byron Katie's incredible, life-changing story.
Oh, thank you, Jay.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. I normally ask people one question to start things off, and that is, what does success look like to you?
Oh, my, contentment.
Mm.
Contentment. Contentment.
Mm. So what does that actually look like, true contentment?
It's like being comfortable on a platform that's ready to launch, having everything that you need and open to everything. And as it comes in, it's experienced in absolutely a fearless state of mind, and you just do it. Another way of saying you just do it, it's just like live as a yes. And you don't need a plan that way. You know, it's just like there's a lot of time to have a really sweet life. And if someone, like, you know, years ago, someone said, would you come talk to us? And it was like, the one that comes to mind is like Japan. And I just said yes. And I'd never been to Japan. I'd never done traveling. It's just, and it was just a yes. So there's nothing after that. Everything is a don't know, you know, that don't know mind. And I didn't know who was picking me up at the airport, what they look like, no information whatsoever. But they had seen my picture and from someone that sent them a snapshot, I guess. And did the work with people every day for several days, and they brought me back to the airport. I ended up again at LAX and went home.
I'm glad they actually brought you back because you said yes to something.
When we're at home in ourselves, we're at home wherever we are.
Yeah.
And this may sound a little far-fetched to some ears and experiences, but it's my experience. It's all I've got to share, and I love it. I don't have to live my life out of a plan because I trust the plan that automatically comes in. We need nothing for it. Sometimes it just looks like, do the dishes, mm-hmm. and I just do them. You know, just take out the trash. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yes. Make up the bed. Brush your teeth. It's just, oh my goodness. Who would think that the greatest ask of all would appear to be so mundane, but it is not a little thing where I come from.
Yes. Mm. There's so much to unpack there. I've got so many questions just from that one little bit. Now, I want to ask you first, though. We'll go to your backstory. So, how did you grow up? Like, what were your experiences growing up? What did you want to be when you actually grew up?
Oh my gosh! I think we can all, if we just get really quiet and say happy.
Yes.
But I was very slow. I noticed the children around me in classrooms, you know, were understood what was going on. I didn't understand so much. And then I started faking it, like maybe I knew a little or knew what the teacher was talking about. And then eventually I began to kind of catch up. And then maybe in some areas I noticed I was caught up, some areas not so much. And I think we can all, you know, all relate to that. And And then I, at some point, during a divorce of my first husband. It was so hard. We had three children, and it was just really hard, really just devastating. And I was terrified. We had a lot of money, and I had seriously built up a business, and just left it all to get away with, you know, with my children. And I felt like I got the best of the deal there, but that was the deal. And then, oh my gosh, I haven't even shared these things before. And then, you know, I began to experience depression, and it ran deep, and it ran for over a decade. So seriously that most days I wasn't able to even get out of bed or brush my teeth. It was terrible. And I thought if anyone saw me, it would hurt them. I believed myself to be so horrifically awful to look at. You know, I just felt terrible inside, and I just didn't want anyone to suffer like that. So agoraphobia basically is, I'm describing some portion of that. And oh, Jay, honey, it was so awful. I didn't want anyone to have to experience that state of mind when there's another way. Mm-hmm. And then one day, as I lay sleeping on the floor after about 10 years of this hopeless existence state of mind. So one day as I lay sleeping on the floor, a cockroach crawled over my foot, and it woke me up from that dead sleep I was in the night before. I slept on the floor next to my bed because I didn't feel that I deserved a bed to sleep in. That's crazy. And yet that was my state of mind. Mm. So when I woke up from that dead sleep on the floor, before ego could step in and take that space over, there was something between that wake up and where the ego did take over. There was that space in between. I saw it. It was, oh my. And I began to laugh. And if I had to put it into words, I was like, why didn't someone tell me? Yep. It was so simple. I saw how my entire universe was created. Mm. And I began to laugh. Because I was, what I saw that's invaluable, that's important, I'd like to share with your listeners is I saw that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. And when I didn't believe my thoughts, when I questioned them, I didn't suffer. And I've come to see that this is true for every human being. And so everything I have of value that I discovered on the floor is wrapped up inside of each one of us. Mm. And those four questions I call the work, when we sit in those, it taps us into that kind of knowledge, or the knowledge and experience that I discovered on the floor. I don't even know if I discovered it, Jay. It's like I was shown. Mm-hmm. I woke up to. And that the waking up was the shown. So the shown woke up, and I don't even know how to say it. But, oh, I am so, so grateful. Oh, my goodness. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. The ego has to take over. This identity, the I am Byron Katie, I am this, I am that, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a this. It's the I identification. And it's something that it would take me over. So I would have to just sit quietly in my own work. And I saw and see the ego as a terrified child, like a child just terrified of losing its life. And so I see the ego as, you know, I fell in love with the ego and it kind of fell in love with me. It's, you know, I questioned it and it began to trust the wisdom that it tapped into. And I began to get very, very quiet. And it kind of merged into a friendly universe. And it's so simple. I don't know how complicated my words sound, but if anyone, if I say, what is your name? And they give me their name, they can do this work. They answer the question. It's that simple.
I can't begin to tell you how much I actually relate to your story on so many levels, not the marriage or the kids aspect, but the depression and feeling absolutely worthless, not wanting to get out of bed. That happened to me when I was 14 years old and I was exposed to a terrible world of cutting. I had to sit there on Skype and watch the girl I was dating at the time literally cut herself open. And like as a 14-year-old that is going through puberty and adolescence and trying to form ideas of the world, seeing that for the first time and the abuse that came, like the verbal and the emotional abuse, was quite profound. And I lied to myself. I lied to my parents. I lied to my friends. I was crying out for attention. And I remember sitting down with a counselor. She was a beautiful lady who absolutely I adored. She adored me. And we just connected on this another level. And she got down to the real cause and she made me realize that it wasn't about me. And I shouldn't own what I don't need to own.
Yeah.
I should own all the things that I was doing wrong, but I wasn't doing anything really wrong. Mm-hmm. I was just putting all this pain on myself from what I was seeing. And later in life, you know, when I got over, I worked towards overcoming that side of depression. Then I went back into last year, another state of depression when it always seemed to come with a broken relationship. So, but last year I lost one of the loves of my life, my beautiful German Shepherd of 11 years.
Oh no, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to put her down and both of we were like this. We were like inseparable, you know. And I didn't have really much of a grieving process through that. And then not long after that, the girl I was dating for a good 6-7 months, she ended up breaking the relationship without any real reason, just because she wanted to go. And then straight after that, I was also thrust into the deep end of a very new job that I had no idea what I was doing. So I was lost.
Oh, honey. Oh, my.
Yeah.
We get what we need, don't we?
We get exactly what we need. And it comes with, I have a question that I've only said this to a couple of people. What would you rather, Katie, would you rather sink or swim?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. You know, I have to tell you the truth, sink.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. You're the first person I've spoken to that has said that as well. It's so true because I think we all want to swim. We all want to get to that surface level in life and stay there because it's comfortable, because it's good. But if we don't learn to sink first, how are we ever going to swim?
And it's so amazing if we're out of any mental past future experience to think. Oh my goodness. And swimming, we can do the same, but in the peace of stillness, it's just, oh my goodness, nothing to fear. Nothing to fear. You know, I drank water after this experience and it was, oh, this is so, I don't even know to share this, but here it comes. But I'm drinking water and it went down what some people might say the wrong way.
Yep.
And because I love sinking, when I didn't even know it at the time, I wouldn't have named it that, but the water was going down that what we call the wrong pipe, and it was amazing. And then it simply came up. So I understood in my own way what maybe a fish feels like. It was like an amphibious experience. And, you know, I'm in for it all.
Yeah.
I love life.
I actually tell people to be good at failing, because in failure you learn one of life's most greatest lessons, which is humility.
We finally got an A+ at something, Jay.
I know. Tell me about it. I mean, Katie, if I was to tell you all the things that I've had to endure and experience in my life, you'd be shocked. And I'm only 23.
Honey.
I'm still just a baby, I know. But
well, you know, I think that old or young is kind of a state of mind. Mm. You sound aged.
Thank you. A lot of people say that I look young, but I'm old at heart.
Yeah.
I think that comes
old
from
old in wisdom.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. But I'm curious about going back to this yes aspect of of your life. You know, for a lot of people, it is hard to say yes. And I think it comes through fear. And how can we actually get that mindset of overcoming the fear? Can we overcome fear? Is that actually possible to actually get to the point of saying yes?
I didn't have anything to lose. The pain that you and I are both describing in our life, those states of mind, I didn't feel like I had anything to lose. And so that somehow carried over as a fearless state of mind into this experience. You know, nothing to lose. Let's say if someone's coming with a machete and chops off my head, where's the problem? You know, it's there is no problem. Mm. And if someone, these graphics, I don't know what state of mind brings this in, but here it is. It's like if someone says he's going to shoot me, where's the problem? If I am not imagining the bullet before it hits me, if I'm not imagining him pulling the trigger, so far he has just said, I'm going to kill you. Mm. And my mind has frightened me, not that saint in front of me. Mm. So when this actually did happen to me late one night as I was walking on a riverbank in this desert area. And I was able to, because I was not in this dream of what isn't. In other words, the dream of him pulling the trigger. I was able to look into his eyes, and just my thought was, I hope he doesn't do that to him. When he said he was going to kill me, because I don't want any human being to suffer. But when we're awake to the cause of all suffering, which is what we're really talking about here, when we come up to the cause of all suffering, which is imagining onto a situation what isn't happening, we can't see what is happening. So that fear has taken the place of wisdom. It has moved it aside, or we can say it overrides it. Mm-hmm. And so we miss life. So let's say if my husband Stephen walks into the room and he says, "Good morning, sweetheart," and I think, yeah, after what he said last night, after what he did. And so I have this image in my head of what is not.
Mm.
What is not. And so I imagine that onto the real deal. Good morning, sweetheart. So I imagine that onto him. And so then I have to give him the look. You know, and punish him for saying, "Good morning, sweet." So, you know, it's a stake of it's a case of mistaken identity. It's like I am trading the I am trading the inauthentic for the authentic.
Mm.
And I think we do that with some of us, with everyone we meet. We imagine who them to be, so we cannot meet them. Mm. And I think it's really important that we meet each other. Mm. And if we don't put our stories on each other, then there it is, the heart. The heart, you know, it's alive and well. Mm. And they're welcome to show me who they are, who they aren't. If that seems to be the way of it, but I don't want to guess onto them.
No. And it's so true what you said. And for many, many people, this comparison syndrome is such a huge issue, because we oftentimes, instead of getting to and asking the tough questions, we're so afraid of what people are going to think of us for asking those kinds of questions in the first place, because there's that vulnerability aspect to it. And I know I've been there many, many times that I've closed myself off to questions that I don't feel like sharing. And that was me, 100%.
Yeah.
But when I got to the place of saying, hang on a minute, going back to, it's not about me. If I really want to help people, if I really want to impact a person's life, and I may never know what they're going through either, but if I really want to do that, I need to take myself out of the equation. I need to be vulnerable. And part of being vulnerable is opening yourself up to being hurt. But that's okay still. It's the most beautiful. It hurts. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid, I call it. You know, so it hurts for a little while, but guess what your body does? Opening yourself up to fresh air allows your body to heal quicker.
Yeah.
So if you can go through that little bit of pain, then on the other side is the most, it's beautiful. Like,
it is beautiful. We like ourselves better than when we just speak authentically. And then people will think what they think anyway. If I speak inauthentically, people are going to think what they think anyway. So I may as well be authentic.
Exactly. So don't be afraid.
Isn't it crazy trying to control what someone thinks anyway? I mean, what a hopeless chase.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I know last year I tried to control what I couldn't control. And I remember having a conversation with my ex about 3 weeks before it all ended. She was giving me a hint and she was asking me about what if this was to happen rather than what is. And my brain immediately said, I don't focus on the what ifs. I focus on the what if, what is. Because if I focus on the what if, then I'm going to allow my brain to stress over pretty much nothing.
Yeah. And then you're going into what you can't know.
Exactly. So it kind of frustrated me a little bit in that moment. And I was like, why are you even telling me this? But it sort of made me understand that you got to be mindful of the what ifs, but that doesn't mean you allow them to control what is.
Yes. Very good. Very well spoken. Very well said.
So nice. I'm curious, Katie, because you mentioned that you were married previously and then you ended up in a depression. Was it because of that broken relationship that you ended up in that depression?
I think the horror of it, to my mind, you don't divorce. When you marry, it's forever. And so here I am in this divorce. And then, and my children shared with me also that that's when it started, that terrible depression. And what a downhill spiral. And the addictions in there, the compulsive overeating and the loathing, the self-hatred. I think that's like the biggest addiction of identifying, believing ourselves as despicable. And of course, it's just natural. It's all a part of it. Mm-hmm. And until we wake up to something beautiful, something immovable. Mm. And our brains go so quickly into the fearful mode, the unchangeable past and the fearful future. That it's in between place. It's very crowded, and in between the, you know, that linear past future, what's in the center there, that immovable, that beautiful, when we touch that, it wakes us up in a way that nothing can compete with, especially the nothing of the past and future. And that may sound a bit strange to people, but it's just the not now I'm talking about, and as opposed to just now.
So this idea of addictions and overcoming addictions, these four questions, have they been known to help people overcome these bad habits and bad addictions? And
yeah, the ultimate addiction is the ego. Mm-hmm. And you know, the ego's addiction, as it's identifying as something that can never be, and that is a physical object. Mm. So that that addiction is all about I, me, me, me. And when I think about you, it's all about me. And you know, just it's still I. But so that's the ultimate addiction. So after the experience, and I began to, when it began to take me over again, the ego, I would sit, get still. People were calling me enlightened. That's just another identification. I would just sit in what is there that was not now, put it on paper, like judge him, judge her, judge them, judge the world, and just put it on paper, and then just settle into that original moment on the floor. Is it true? Mm-hmm. How do I react? What happens when I believe the thought? And that shows us those not now images of past, future, past, future, past, future. And then who would I be without it? Mm-hmm. And it's, and then turn it around like, my life is ruined. My I can't think of a simple, like something terrible is going to happen. And after those four questions, I turn it around and witness opposites, just to try them on, not to exchange one belief for another, but just to try it on and see what fits. Something wonderful is going to happen, and then try that on. Mm. Okay, something wonderful just happened. It was so real. I was in terror, and something wonderful happened when I questioned it. Mm. I see the cause of my suffering. It was an illusion.
Mm.
It was not the beauty of right here, right now.
I love the way you describe it, because I've never really heard anything like this before. And I think it's profound, especially this work aspect. And I want to ask you, Katie, how did you actually, from start to where it is now, like begin this business of the work and this foundation, all these best-selling books as well? Like, how did that all happen?
By invitation, I just did my work. Mm. And like the invitation to Japan, to Osaka, and like people just inviting me to their homes and inviting me across the country, across the world. And I would just say yes. And I would buy my own air tickets. And I don't know how I did that with three children, but my own, they were grown. The last one was already off in school, just barely 16. And when they would pick me up from the airport, they would take me to the first place I'd ask them to take me was to the grocery store. And then I would buy groceries. I'd find out how many people were there, and I'd buy them with my own money. And then when we got there, I would do all the cooking, all the serving, all the dishes, and work with them all day and all night. And I knew how to raise children, and I didn't know the difference. And it was just follow the simple directions of the mental, nothing to lose. So then eventually they started handing me money, and that was radical. It could buy my next ticket, my next flight. And it just went like that. It would, because I had given away, my worldly goods. I had my house, my cars, my dog, just people would say, oh, I wish this were mine. And so I don't recommend this to everyone. I had by some grace a moment in time that left me fearless, as long as I kept this practice up and I sit in this practice. It's like if I had the thought now something terrible is going to happen, it would end in a question mark. Mm-hmm. It feels inside of like something terrible is going to happen. And so it's a life of inquiry. Mm-hmm. And it's, so it was like that. And it hasn't stopped, with this pandemic. It's just, I just follow the yellow brick road. I certainly prefer it to my own life.
I think I do as well, to be honest with you.
I think so. I think so, Jay. Oh my goodness.
I'm even more curious now because you've got this very servant attitude and a very servant heart. It's quite humbling to hear and actually witness for myself. I'm curious, what does love look like to you?
The absence of fear.
Ooh, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah. That way you can live as the yes.
I'm writing that down. So how can someone find this real version of love?
Well, for me, it's not something that goes away. It's not something they could ever lose. It is a term for our true nature, and that's the way that we can test that is. Anything we think, say, or do that goes against our heart, using the heart as the symbol, that goes against our true nature, we feel like guilt. We feel guilt. And guilt, I refer to it as the fertilizer. It's like the best fertilizer in the world to grow addiction. It's the ego's best friend, guilt. So it's addiction. So again, these questions, they show me up to myself, and I'm not looking for a saint. I'm looking at anything in me that would show up as the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And it can only be what I am thinking and believing. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the cause of our identity. Mine, yours, the world's, in my world.
Mm-hmm. So true. So very true. Katie, I want to ask you, who in your life has had the greatest impact, whether it's been financially, spiritually, mentally, or physically?
I guess that would be me.
How come?
It's the only authentic version I can look to.
Yes. Yes. Is there?
I can't believe, for just because I believe someone to be this, this, and that doesn't mean that it's so. So I go to the one I can test it out on. That's myself.
Which leads me to my next question, which is trusting in yourself. Is that dangerous?
Gosh, I wish I had an example. Trusting in myself. You know, I trust myself to do what I do because I do. And the way I believe that to be, if it's right in me, then good. If it's not, I look at what I was thinking and believing. And I question that and start over. Brand new, always new. I see the tree. Who am I? I'm the one that sees the tree. Okay. Who is she? Well, she dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Okay, you feel it? It's like, I need to look to myself because that wasn't her. That was me. That was me imagining her. So I missed her. So it's never too late. If I never see her again, she lives in me. I question what I believe about her. 100% authentically question myself about what I was believing about her. And now she can live in me comfortably. And there's never, you know, the whole world lives in each of us. Like, you have your world, I have my world, he has his, she has hers. And anyone that wants peace in the world, you know, let's say I want peace in the world, I want world peace. Well, I look to myself and that's my work. You know, it's like the war of the planets until we do.
What does this idea of peace, right? So I think every single one of us are actually looking for inner peace. Can you describe what real peace actually looks like?
Well, you know, I think I said earlier, the absence of suffering. And in the absence of suffering, I'm connected. So what does real peace look like? I'm connected with everyone and everything. And if I'm not, then I question what I'm believing about them, him, her, me. It's my job to keep the peace. No one else's.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just like me. They're on their path. And they're my teachers. There's no one I speak with that is not my teacher, the beloved. I'm so grateful.
I have, I'm writing a book currently, and it's funny that you should mention being on your own path. The title of my book's called The Path of an Eagle. And the reason why I titled it The Path of an Eagle is because whenever an eagle gets knocked down, spreads its wings, gets back up, and when it soars, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And an eagle never gives up. Like, it just keeps doing, it keeps going. It just, when there's a storm, it'll protect its family. And by doing so, he will go up above the clouds where the storm isn't present. And then when the storm's over, he'll go back down. And I think that's like literally my life is, no matter how many times I've been knocked down, I continue to get back up and I continue to soar, because that's the best part, is knowing that I actually did get back up. I didn't stay down.
No.
And I'm able to help others. You know, I think what you mentioned earlier, this idea of stories, they can either disconnect us or they can either connect us. And I think that it's powerful when we do share, like what you're doing at the moment, sharing your wisdom and your story with everybody else, to say there are other ways. There is real inner peace when you choose to be connected with more than just yourself, with others that have been through similar things. And that's what stories do. That's the connection.
Yeah.
But you got to make that choice. And I've really enjoyed this conversation, Katie. I've got a couple more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
If you could ask a question to anyone alive or dead, who would it be, why, and what would you ask them, do you think?
How can I help?
Wow.
And that's not the best one, because it assumes they need help, that it's all that I've got.
And authentically saying, how can I help?
Mm.
That is so good. Who would you ask it to? Just anyone?
Well, it would be silent. It would look like availability to live out, how can I help, without even speaking it.
Mm-hmm. My second last question for you, Katie, is, this is my legacy question that I love asking people at the end. So you've been able to reach the age of 100 and your friends have put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. We won't ask them how they got it. We'll call it magic. But being able to put it together and show it to you on your 100th birthday, what do you want that film to say and to show about your life?
A blank screen.
A blank screen.
Maybe you could say it's a beginning.
Oh, that is powerful. that just smacked me right in the face. That's so good. Did you just come up with that? Or was
Well, you asked me a question and you know, we never know what is going to meet that question.
Wow. Wow. If you could recommend anyone read any book, what book would you recommend them read?
Oh, gosh. You know, I call it The Book of Yourself.
Again. Oh, I love these answers. That's so good. Where can people find you, Katie? Where can people find your work?
At ByronKatie.com, or they can find me Monday through Thursdays, 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific. Mm. We hang out for an hour, and like the two of us, we just really have a good time. I do the work with people and meet the family of the world from my screen. You know, we're all virtual.
At the moment we are, yes, but it's an interesting time. But Byron, Katie, I just want to acknowledge you for a moment and say I appreciate everything that you have done and everything that you're putting out there into the world. You are a true, authentic human being, and I don't find that many people are like that in today's world, which is sad in many ways, but thank you for sharing your story. And
oh, thank you, Jay. You know, we're all works in progress.
That's true.
We're all works in progress.
Thank you for showing up and for being of service and for showing so much kindness. I really do appreciate it. So once again, thank you for coming on the Storybox podcast.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for all that you serve and all that you are. Bye-bye, beloved.
I don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another incredible story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you'd like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Storybox on any podcast platform. It's that easy. If you did get something from our guest today, please share it around to a friend or family member that you think could benefit from hearing this powerful story. And before you go, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will only take 30 seconds and it'll go towards reaching more people. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one. Your support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the story box, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.